do you agree with me that Mike is looking very healthy off the back of his trip to America?
America.
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 America. I'd like two tickets for the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
America. America.
Get me the DA.
A slice of old mama's apple pie down the Alamo in New York City.
Don't be ridiculous. You'll never be an actor in B-movies. You'd be more likely to be President of the United States. Mr. Reagan.
Burgers.
The big landscapes have somehow kind of... I don't know. He's looking vital. He's looking trim. He's looking...
I'm now a member of Alpha Omega Psi. I'm fully signed up. I've been on spring break, basically, and I've never felt better.
You do have a frat boy sort of glow about you.
I've been to Tampa Bay, Connecticut.
And you've got some dark, dark secrets.
And that's really given me a spring in my step. It's nothing like a little bit of a dark secret to pep me up.
But I think it feels like with America, it could go either way. Like after some time in America, you could have either gone down the route of like eating like pink sludge out of a nozzle for the entire time.
And it's quite hard in some places in America not to eat pink sludge out of a nozzle.
Well, the nozzle belt. We're talking about the nozzle belt states.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no one wanted to eat anything other than the nozzle belt in my family. So we just nozzle belted it. On the whole.
Oh, really? Because I was imagining that because you're kind of glowing, you're looking healthy. You were then going the other way, which is entirely only eating like steamed crabs and crayfish and lobsters.
Hot mollusks.
Oh, no, I wish. I think that's what I would have liked, but I just went for the nozzle diet. So I think probably what you're not, it's probably not coming across on Zoom. It's not so much a healthy glow as a sort of more of a sort of toxic sort of overspill that's coming through.
Oh, I see. Because quite often the body will look at its best just before... Like all the flesh falls off your bones and everything just goes
exposing
just before the explosion.
Yeah, exactly. It's the light seeping through from my spine through my skin. That's what you're seeing. It's the hot bones.
I see.
But yeah, that's why you can only see my upper half because Pam sneezed on my legs this morning. They just came clean off.
You're a bit like that TV show. Is it a cake?
Mm.
In that you look almost exactly like a Mike Wozniak, but you've got the consistency of a cake, right?
Is it a cake or is it silage?
Or is it a silage cake?
So, guys, we've all been on our holidays, and I thought we could maybe kick off with a feature that I like to call the foreign holiday breakfast ham buffet update.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Lovely, lovely little feature. I'm going to just say, I love this little jingle that you've whizzed up for it.
Oh, Henry!
Yes, the summer may be over, but we'll always have those golden memories. The memories of the breakfast hams that we consumed. Whether German business traveller or Italian fun seeker, ham is always there for you at breakfast.
The Foreign Holiday Breakfast Buffet Ham Update.
Does that ham look right to you? So we've all been to different parts of the world, each with their own distinct ham culture.
Yeah.
It's time for a roundup. Now, I went to Greece and Albania.
Lovely.
Before we go there, what are you imagining the kind of ham culture is?
Well, it's quite hot and rugged in the Balkans, right? So I'm imagining some quite chewy hams on the whole is what I'm...
Okay.
Thinking some very sinewy beasts are going into that ham buffet.
Well, I'm thinking we're talking about it's going to be lamb hams, isn't it? These are principally lamb.
Ah, the rare Balkan lamb hams. Of course,
it's going to be a lamb ham because these are lamb cultures. We're talking about very very sharp and steep sort of rocky hills, mountains.
Yeah, skewered from birth.
So actually grown up, but sort of living their whole lives on the skewer.
Exactly, yeah. And generally rotated up and down a mountain. Yeah.
Well, that really tenderises the flesh, doesn't it? A bit like those things that you roll your body on, allegedly, to tenderise your own flesh. What, do you know those things?
Yeah, a sort of post-exercise ball thing.
Yeah, yeah. But also, it's very much the territory of the goat that can walk up a vertical wall, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
With your camera in his mouth.
So I'm thinking quite tough lamb hams, yeah. As Mike suggested, quite sinewy, I imagine. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the answer is
In Albania for breakfast, I was presented with a plate with no ham.
Oh,
ham treasure hunt. Just a chopped up tomato, big slab of feta cheese.
Okay.
An omelette.
Yeah. Bloody hell. You're saying that almost as if the omelette was the side dish, but I'm guessing the omelette was the main, was it? And the chopped tomatoes were on the side? Or was it one of those mini omelettes?
Sort of not, though.
Because
it's really hard for me to describe this.
There are cultures that see the omelette as a mini side dish. It'll happen in Japan, I think.
Well, any of the non-omelette cultures.
Any of the non-omelette cultures. They'll use it as, they'll wrap things in it. They'll use it almost as a sort of textile.
I think that the omelette on the plate was the largest constituent part, but the way it was presented to me and the way it was slapped down onto the plate made it feel like it definitely
was overshadowed by the tomato.
Well, the tomatoes are very famously in that part of the world.
Oh,
those sun-kissed tomatoes.
Oh, the tomatoes. Oh, those are real tomatoes.
Those tomatoes.
Now,
yeah.
It's quite often said that show me, if you want to know the heart of a chef, show me their omelette. Because that is, it's sort of like, it's the equivalent of a 3-point turn with driving. It's like, if you can do that, you've basically nailed it. Do you know what I mean? Like that.
If you can do that, you can basically drive.
Yeah, you can 3-point turn your way all the way from Bristol to Dundee if you want.
Yeah, it'll take a long time, but you'll get there.
It's quite wide turning circles. You may go through a couple of shopping plazas.
You're going to absorb a lot of swearing on that route, so you're going to need a strong constitution mentally. But you'll get there.
And also, useful if you can eat an omelette as you're doing it, that will keep you... It'll give you the energy needed.
Because an omelette, it can...
Because an omelette is so easy that any chef can do it, right? Isn't that the idea? If they fuck up an omelette...
Well, no, but that's the thing. It's easy, but it's...
Is it like the Chinese game Go, easy to do, impossible to master? Is that what they say?
I think it could be that. Yeah, exactly. So it's almost like it's the most, it feels simple, but it's a bit like
the Chinese game Go.
It's a bit like, you know what? It's actually a bit like the Chinese game Go.
Oh, yeah, why is that?
In that it's quite, the basic rules are simple, but it's like a life, but it takes ages to get really good at it. And that's why people often say in China about the Chinese game Go, that
it's a bit like an omelette.
It's a bit like an omelette. In that, yeah, it feels easy on paper, doesn't it? You get a couple of eggs. Oh, yeah. You turn the yolk of the egg, the protein store for the chicken, the mini chicken, to you emulsify that with the white... encasement that protects the protein store. Where's it up?
Yeah, an egg.
No, but it seems easy on paper, doesn't it? You toss it up with a fork, get hot fat, get it into some hot fat in a pan.
Clarity, by the way, is the theme of this season. We're just making sure that everyone possible is caught up at every stage. No one's getting left behind.
Exactly. No one left behind.
So if you didn't know what an egg was at the beginning of this episode... Yeah. You may soon know.
No, but the point being that actually there's a lot of variety within that, and there's a whole spectrum of omelets you can end up creating. You know, you can have a melted cheese center. You can have a, sometimes it goes horribly wrong and it's like a spongy, the whole thing becomes like an egg sponge if it's overcooked. And it's like you can show true brilliance. It'd be like saying to Mozart, "Yes, you are a great composer."
It'd be like saying to Mozart, "Do you want a game of the Chinese game Go?"
Or we could just go out and get an omelet. So anyway, Ben, what was the omelette like?
Quite pillowy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Quite thick. One day out of six, big thick black hair in it.
Oh yeah, that's not bad. Not bad odds.
Oh, one day out of six, there was a thick black hair in it.
Yeah, which as you say, Mike, I think is pretty good odds.
Yeah.
No ham.
Zero ham. Mm.
But I did spend 2 days in Greece, and I'm now going to send you a photograph of the ham on offer at the buffet.
Okay.
So what we're looking at is a very standard hotel ham selection.
It's standard. It also tells me that you're quite late to the buffet. You're an early riser on holiday because at least 2/3 of the hams have gone. No one's touched the breakfast sweet corn.
Because why would you? It's an absolutely crazy idea. Also, on the left, The rabbit turds haven't been flying off the shelf, have they?
We'll have to share this image, I think.
I don't know what those are, actually, Henry. You're right.
Well, they're dry rabbit turds.
And you were wise to avoid them as well. It's a workmanlike, very basic breakfast buffet.
Yeah, it's very uninspired ham selection.
I'd expect to see that in a youth hostel in the Netherlands as well.
That is, you're right. It's the classic youth hostel Netherlands spread, and you can tell that by the sweet corn.
I'm getting slight Swedish prison vibes off it, in the sense that actually it is a bit like a hotel in Swedish prison, probably. Like, but you know, they're at least looking after you well. You're going to have a good time in there in Swedish prison, I imagine. But they have done things like they've taken away any kind of lettuce decoration around the hams.
Yeah, and also crucially, like the Swedish prisoners, these hams are definitely reformed hams.
Oh yeah. Nice.
Really nice.
Nice bit of wordplay to kick off season 6.
I'm quite interested in the way they've been presented. They've been folded. Mm-hmm. Yes, each ham has been folded to create that kind of
Well, any good hotel knows that everything should, if you can fold it, you should fold it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how they get their stars.
It's the amount of folding, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is why it was hoteliers that first discovered you could only fold a towel 8 times.
Exactly right.
And if you fold it, you literally can't fold it any more than that. You know that is true, that you can't fold a piece of paper more than 8 times. Do you know that?
I think that feels like a bollocking. That feels like the first bollocking of the series.
If you try it, I mean, don't try it now, but...
I think two things about that. One, I agree with Ben. I feel like a bollocking is a coming.
Yeah.
Brace thyself.
Two, I was always led to believe that it was 7.
Oh, okay. Basically, you fold a piece of paper 7 times. Eventually, to fold it an 8th time, it would have to become so tall it would blow the roof off your house. But no, so these hams have been folded in that way with a little bit of give left and then put in a row, a bit like an Elizabethan ruff, isn't it? It's the ham ruff.
You could make a ham ruff out of those. Yeah. Had I got down early.
Yeah, you could have been wearing a ham ruff.
There was a really big window. I think it was 6 till 10. And I went down at 9:58.
Oh, you're crazy. Those hams are going to dry right out there. The swimming pool by then is surrounded by people wearing ham ruffs who've got the best spots.
Yeah.
I wondered what was going on. I thought it was a kind of Meat Producers of Europe Shakespeare convention.
No, they caught the worm, my friend.
Yeah.
So what we've got on the left is we've got quite a pink ham. On the it's got a little bit of sweat. I'd say it's been under lights for quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
Under lights. In a hot Mediterranean country.
Yeah. So it's
by the window.
They're almost, I imagine, the same texture and consistency as and sort of wetness level as your thighs would have been, Ben.
Let's not talk about my thighs because this is a true story. I did so much walking when I was in Albania because I was on my own. I didn't have anything to do. I just went for long walks. And I kept finding things on Google Maps and then walking to them and not realizing that because Google Maps doesn't have topography, it was at the top of a like 4,000 feet tall mountain. And my chubby, moist thighs inside my shorts at one point started bleeding.
Oh, wow. God.
on the inside?
Or? On the inside, yeah. Like a sort of stigmata type thing.
But I don't think it's likely to trigger a world religion in the same way. This experience of yours in Albania.
They basically, my inner thighs had... Well, at all times I was there, day or night, they were at a level of humidity and sort of slight moistness at all times. There was no dry moment. And so they just slowly denatured.
And you'd think that would actually make them bleed less, wouldn't you?
Eventually.
Because they're fully lubricated all the time.
Did you try and protect them with a gauze of moist hams or anything like that? Because those slices would have been
ideal.
But
there were no hams in Albania. That's what I'm talking about. Had I been somewhere else, I would have slapped on the ham layer and kept those fresh.
So these are the Greek hams you're showing us.
These are Greek hams, yeah.
Can I just quickly say, sorry, I just go back to the hams. Do you mind?
No, never.
No, please. This is after all, the foreign holiday ham breakfast buffet.
Yeah. What you've got in the middle then is 2 white hams. And then on the right, we've got salami, which we can discount. You don't eat salami at breakfast. I mean,
also, not really a ham.
Not really a ham.
No, those 7 slices of salami have been there since 1992. We all know that. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, they may in fact be wax. They may not be...
Yeah, they've been put there to look like they were available.
In fact, because it's on a white tray, it could actually be an A4. That could just be a print. Someone's printed out a photo of some salamis from the internet. But the white hams, so this is an area which really, really, for some reason, distresses me, which is your turkey hams and your sort of hamified chicken. No. for some reason, as soon as the Venn diagram of ham crosses over...
Of ham and poultry.
Poultry.
Mm.
So I can't deal with that.
It's very pale, isn't it? Very bleached out. I mean, it could even be hamified cheese we're looking at. I don't know.
Exactly. But it's the idea of how have you hamified
something that small?
Exactly.
You're looking at your breakfast and you know a strong hose has been involved.
Yeah.
Well, basically, you know, Mike's been at the pink nozzle all August.
Yeah.
That's just the next stage. If you pink nozzle that onto a cold plate,
yeah,
it will form into the ham, the chicken-fied ham.
But I am, I can't remember if I've talked about this on the pod or not, but I was once in New York having a lovely breakfast. Bacon and waffles and stuff.
I think you might have done.
And then the person said that it was turkey bacon and I freaked out and I couldn't eat it.
I don't think you have told us that.
Because it was turkey bacon. What are you talking about?
Well, they have a whole other category there. They have a phrase which is the least appetizing phrase in the universe of breakfast meats.
Oh, no.
It's just something about this whole section in the supermarket is breakfast meats.
Breakfast meats.
It's so vague.
That's heinous.
And it's a bit of a come one, come all as well, breakfast meats. So anything's welcome to join the slices of miscellaneous on the shelves.
Any meat can be a breakfast meat.
If you feed it through the right nozzle.
Okay, Mike, so you're in the US. I assume at some point you would have come across some breakfast ham.
Well, that's the thing. It's the breakfast meats, isn't it? And if you went out into a diner for breakfast or something, you might be offered. The choice is always immense, and you'd be offered, you know, which breakfast meats do you want? Yeah, waffles on rye or whatever.
Yeah. Are you sure you actually went to America?
It sounds like quite a sort of collection of hokum cliches you've just given us there.
I made it up. We definitely went for some super sweet sort of sugar based breakfasts more than one occasion.
Good man.
Yeah. Your waffly pancake type business. Pile of cream the size of your head. That kind of thing. To start your day and end your day in one go, basically.
But no breakfast hams. But I'm looking for specific hams here, Mike.
But I wasn't presented with a single breakfast ham.
Oh.
Partly because we stayed with family for most of it. And also we spent a couple of nights in New York where we were in hotels that did not offer breakfast and certainly did not offer ham. In any way, shape, or form. You had to go out into New York City to find your ham.
Can I use the words end of an empire? it feels like that for me is an obvious sign of decline.
Well, it's been a tough few years for everybody, hasn't it, across the globe? And I people aren't talking about it, but hotels in New England, broadly speaking, aren't offering ham. I couldn't tell you what's happening in the southern states or the western seaboard. Perhaps if you know the ham situation, write in and let us know. Yeah.
Do write in.
People were very friendly, but they weren't offering ham.
No, and that's not true friend. You know, true friendship is silently sliding a plate of ham towards you.
Just leaving it in a room for a few hours, knowing that you'll be there
4 hours later. Henry, you went to France, is that right?
I did, yeah.
Of course you went to France.
Of course I went to France, man.
Mother France.
Mother France. I'm just thinking if I had any breakfast ham. I ate quite a lot of ham. I didn't think I had any breakfast ham because it was continental breakfast in the sense of croissant baguettes and jam. I had every day, and I wasn't in a hotel. So
you weren't staying in a place again where
There was no buffet.
Can I just say that my section, this new section has been a failure. Sorry, I was supposed to say something.
It's been really.
I'm sorry. I think that is Henry and
yeah.
Yeah, that's on us, I think.
It's almost a shame you put so much work into that jingle as well.
Because we all knew we were all going on holiday.
Yeah.
And it was perfectly reasonable of Ben to assume that we'd all be seeking out the buffets of the world.
And we messed it up for him. No, but I tell you what, if we can broaden the section to cured meats of the continent.
Do you want me to do another jingle?
Yep.
Let me hear you, Bremen.
Does that ham look right to you?
Well, I did see in a service station, I sent you both a photo of it, in a service station in France.
Oh, you did, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They were selling sausages, or dried sausages, saucisson sec, mm-hmm. that were as tall as me, if I was only as tall as my...
As that sausage.
As that sausage. No, they were as tall as a man who would come up to, or woman, who would come up to my, you know, above my pelvis, so halfway up my ribcage height. Really tall. Really long. Yeah, about a metre maybe. It's really, really long. Incredibly.
Probably about as tall as a dog, where you're like, bloody hell, that dog's massive.
No.
You know, there's really big ones when they get on the train and you're like, what the fuck? That's like a horse.
But do you mean tall leg to back or tall tail to nose?
Floor to top of head.
Yeah, floor to top of head, yeah.
Floor to top of head? Which bit of the floor?
The bottom of it.
But the floor directly under the head, otherwise we're on a diagonal. Yeah. Okay, so no, if you saw
the dog standing up, crucially the dog standing up, it's not lying on the back of its head.
Well, it depends which of the representational fallacies of the dog you want to go with. Do you go for a dog can stand on its back legs, at which point its top legs become arms? Or do you mean...
Are you saying it's a fallacy that dogs can stand up?
Think of the Vitruvian dog, yeah? So it's got its arms and its legs spread out in a star shape. Draw a circle around it. And the radius of that circle, that's what we're talking about.
No, that's as big as that sausage.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about height in animals because for animals, humans are the only animals that stand on 2 feet.
Because they keep nodding their head.
They nod a lot. And also they keep on getting on their back. It's delightful, but it's very hard to be for a tailor, making a super dog very hard. No, feet to top of head is how humans measure height, but obviously feet to top of head for a dog, they're longer tail to nose, generally, than feet to head.
Are you worried about which feet? Are you worried that we've chosen the back feet?
That's right. Initially, I wasn't sure.
Oh, I see.
What's he doing with his feet? No, but anyway, Ben, if you saw a dog as tall as that sausage,
yeah,
it wouldn't just be that as a tall dog. It would be, fucking hell. What? No. Okay. Can you see that dog? Thank God you can see it. Oh, thank Jesus Christ. Now run, run, run. I'm not mad, but I am in danger. We all are. Run. That's the height of the dog. It'd be fucking tall for a dog, mate. Unless the dog was also chunky. If the dog was really chunky, it'd be fine. It'd be just a big, dog.
You'd be less worried if it was a chunky dog.
What? That's a what?
Yeah, because proportionally the height wouldn't be so weird. But if it was a slim dog that was that tall.
What, so you'd be really freaked out by a really lanky dog?
Yeah.
Darling, that dog is so... It's like a big streak of piss. Run!
It's like if Nicholas Lyndhurst was a dog. Can you imagine how angular it's... Ah.
So a rakish, stringy dog is the ultimate... Okay.
No, but I'm talking about horrifying. Whereas a big, chunky dog is like, you just go, that dog could definitely defeat me.
In a game of Go.
Which is just like an omelette. Perfect. The perfect intro. We've done it. Everything was rounded off. All the themes were successfully ticked and explored to the correct level.
Yeah. I think it was clear that it was a big sausage.
Yeah, no, basically, I found it very hard to explain, but it was just an incredibly long sausage. I mean, probably about...
Just say that.
It was an incredibly long dry sausage was on sale in this service station.
Did you buy one?
I didn't actually. I just took 4 photos of it,
mm-hmm.
One of which I sent to you. I've got 3 more in the can if you're interested at any point. but I was thinking entice you with the first one and then offer to sell the next 3 to you.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I was trying to get... It was very hard to get a photo to get a sense of the size as well, I found. So I...
You had to put that dog next to it. Do email in if you have your own August foreign holiday ham experiences.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe Ben can get his section going properly with some people who mean business, I guess.
Yeah, who are actually putting the time in.
I did chop up some hams and put them in a galette at one point.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Henry, that's not relevant.
Sorry. You're right.
We don't want to hear about your apprenticeship.
And the fact that I'm now a member of the Galettiers Guild. Not interested in that either. Got my own livery.
Got your own ham scissors.
They've got their own ham scissors. And that's why I've got this melted cheese hat, which looks like a, looks like a hat, but it's actually melted cheese.
And your mushroom signet ring.
I got that from Secret Ray. And and that's why hot bacon lardons are falling out of my mouth whenever I speak. Because you get so many free lardons when you join, that they just tumble out of you for the next couple of weeks.
Okay, so the kickoff of this series, as sent in by Josh Watts.
Hello, Josh.
From Bremen, is teeth.
Teeth, eh? Oh, they're one of those things, aren't they, where if you think about them for very long, it's not very nice, is it?
Visible bones, bones sticking out of your head.
Look at your loved ones, they've got visible bones sticking out of their heads.
I think the weird thing about teeth is, there's something weird about the way that as a society, it's true of eyes as well, you have doctors who deal with every part of the body, bar teeth and eyes.
Yeah.
And then you've got doctors who just do teeth and doctors who just do eyes.
Can I add feet to that, please? Because I wouldn't want, if my chiropodist is listening to this, I wouldn't. And she is very much a doctor and a mentor and an absolute rock for me.
But if you're a doctor, right, you have to know about feet, I think, because you could go to your GP with a bad foot, they'd do something about it. If you went to your GP with bad teeth, they'd laugh you out of there, they'd kick you out of there.
And I think it's also quite fair as well.
Oh, come on then.
Well, isn't it? I mean, unless you're a sort of 12-year-old or something, but I mean, if you're a fully grown adult going to your GP with a tooth problem,
yeah,
I would think you should have heard of a dentist by now, surely.
I know, but do you think it's fair that the system is such that you should have to go to a dentist?
But
I think you should be going to a barber.
Yeah.
Who'll cut your hair, trepan your head, and pull out your teeth.
Ask you about your holiday. And lop bits of you off.
And leech you up.
Sort your bifocal prescription out all at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. By just lopping your eyes off. Oh, they just where's the problem?
Just do some lopping.
And just lop it off.
Just go to the barber for some pruning.
Well, Mike, bear in mind what you've just said. Feels like this might be the moment for me to bring up the time quite recently when I went to my GP with a tooth problem.
No. You chose your GP rather than a dentist.
Well, no, I had a...
This is the thing. You'd been to a dentist first, hadn't you?
Well, I went to... I was alternating. I kept on getting so many second and third opinions. It was completely, very hard to keep track of them all.
Weren't you at your wit's end?
I was at my wit's blimmin' end, mate.
Yeah.
Because I went to see... I went to see a dentist, then I went to see my GP, then I went to see another dentist, then I went to see a different GP in the same practice, and I had two different opinions coming from my two different GPs in my same practice, who were both trying to undermine each other. They'd clearly been working together for a long time, and they were using me as a kind of proxy war. One of them was, it's nerve pain, and the other one was, it's tooth pain, nerve pain, tooth pain, nerve, tooth. And I was an absolute muddle.
Has that been resolved?
Yeah, it sort of went away in the end, sort of.
They just played for time.
That's what GPs rely on a lot of the time, I think, is things just going away. Every time you go to the GP, they've got their finger crossed behind their back going, this better just go away in 2 weeks.
And as they're saying that, they're thinking, I can't wait for you to do the same. So I can go back to buying garden furniture on my computer.
GPs, of course, are famously at the moment under the phenomenal pressure. So I think that's probably true with, you know, if they saw either of you kind of a couple of young, fit, well malingerers, then yeah, absolutely.
Fair play.
They'd want to get rid.
I'm not a malingerer. ASAP. I just happen to be one of
no
the...
No malingerer thinks just... they're a malingerer. Well, no. In a way, that almost proves it.
All right, then I am a malingerer.
Oh, God, he's not a malingerer. It's the ancient paradox.
I'm not a malingerer, Mike. I just happen to be afflicted by a long and regular, almost constant series of quite minor health complaints. Basically, my teeth were hurting. I wasn't sure if it was my teeth or if it was muscles in my jaw. Eventually, the pain went away, but I ended up in a situation where I couldn't open my mouth more than about 5 millimetres wide, about 5 mil.
Yeah, 5 mil gob, sure.
About 5 mil gob.
So you could only eat wafers?
Wafers. I could eat those caramel circular compressed waffles that you get in coffee chains.
Yeah, and whatever bluebell regurgitates into your mouth.
Exactly. So wet meats, cold wet meats from Bluebell.
Bluebell, Bluebell, soft and gentle and wise and kind. Bluebell, Bluebell, sturdy paws and silky thighs. Bluebell. There she flies like a furry star, classic and stylish like a vintage car. You're gonna go far. Bluebell, Bluebell.
And it was like I had my mouth was like a coin operated. I was like I became a coin operated person in that I could really only eat
tuppences.
Well, coin-shaped. I was eating mainly coin-shaped food. So the circular waffles, crisps, very roughly.
Well, your discos, yeah.
Exactly. Your salt and vinegar discos. I was eating those.
Half an Oreo.
So I'd slot that in. That would give me the energy to carry on with my day.
That would give you the energy to consult yet another doctor.
And I remember thinking to myself, it's a shame this isn't happening around Christmas time, because then I could literally buy chocolate coins and I could literally become a coin-operated person. The whole thing started when I was eating a very large box of chips. It was the summer, so it was an outdoor event, and it was an outdoor metal, you know, metallic tinfoil, sort of molded tinfoil.
What?
Box of chips.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, just from, but it's really big. And
are you talking about a bin? You find some chips in a bin?
I didn't want to say it, Mike. So basically, I was eating these little French fries, and there were loads of them. And as I was chewing on them quite. You've been around me when I ate. I eat in a very frenetic, very quick, quite unpleasant. It's very unpleasant to be around me when I'm eating. I eat in a very frenetic way.
Yeah, I normally throw the shroud over. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. That's why. Yeah.
You eat as if you're expecting an imminent attack.
Exactly, and that's why I now. All my friends have different shrouds they've made for me. And normally, Ben, you got a local artisan, didn't you, to weave a picture of me on it? So it's a bit like you're talking to me. Where it's a picture of a sated me. So me, having eaten.
I had to get a local sort of. She normally makes shrouds for cathedrals and that kind of thing. So you've got a kind of beatific sort of. You've got like a little halo and.
I'm carrying the Christ child, I believe, aren't I?
You're suckling the Christ child, yes.
Yeah, and I've got a spear through my neck. It's quite dark medieval art, isn't it? There's quite a lot of...
Oh, yeah, there's over 100 arrows in your side.
Yeah. But anyway, I was eating these chips, and I was eating them incredibly frenetically, as I do. And basically, my teeth started to really hurt. I started getting this incredible pain in my top left teeth area. But the trouble was...
You wanted the chips.
I wanted the chips. So I was like, I've got to really. It felt like the quicker I was eating the chips, the more it was hurting. So I thought, I need to get this out of the way as fast as possible. I need to really, really knuckle down and start chewing these chips intensely. So I was getting through them incredibly fast. The pain was like glowing. I was like, the more I ate the chips, the more it hurt. That triggered then a kind of pain event, which lasted for several months, somewhere in my top left mouth. And I remember the third dentist I saw, the South African guy, and he really made me feel really confident. He went, "Don't what?"
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Went, "Don't worry, mate."
Was it Borat?
He went, "No, the thing with South African is you start Australian and then you just bring it in a bit. Don't worry, mate."
Just bringing it in.
"Don't worry, mate. It's quite clipped. Don't worry, mate. I am like a detective of the mouth. And mark my words, we will get to the..."
Was it Russell Crowe?
"Don't worry, mate. Yeah. Just going to prop open your mouth with this panini."
Sorry, Henry, I cut off your... What was, I think, actually quite a good impression of a...
He said, "Don't worry." He said, "I see this job as being like a detective. And I'll get to the bottom of the mystery in your mouth." And so I felt really confident, laid back. And then half an hour later, he was like,
I've no idea. Can you please leave? he just wanted me out of there because I became like a pariah in the dental community because it was quite insulting to their egos. I think this guy
completely undermined his confidence.
Completely undermined.
He went, well, you were like the case that none of them could solve. They were all hitting exactly. The bars that evening.
Yeah, even resigning in droves.
And as I was leaving, I think I heard him saying under his breath, "You know, it's almost like I'm not a detective, actually." Maybe I'm not. And he took, I see, he took off his trilby and he threw it, put it in the bin. And he went on this.
And the other one.
The little mini trilby that I keep in my socket and that. And then he went on the intercom and he went, "Diana, let's start removing all these old-fashioned 1950s style cabinets, information cabinets, filing cabinets, and the fan, the old metal fan. Let's get rid of all of it. I'm not like a detective. I'm just a dentist. Let's face it.
And the bottle of whiskey in the drawer. I don't drink that anyway. It's just for show.
Yeah, it's made of wax. It's not real.
But let's keep the magnifying glass. It's actually quite useful for being a dentist.
It's actually, that is an area where the Venn diagram of the two skills does actually match up. And the tiny little mirror on the end of the stick is quite good for checking for bombs underneath a toy car. Only a toy car, though.
So
you confounded London's dental community.
And they still don't know the answer. And what happened was I start worrying about the dentist's ego because eventually they start to be, it starts to annoy them that they can't solve it.
It's a bit like when I went scuba diving in Thailand years and years ago. Me and my friend, we went scuba diving. We got taught scuba diving by this Australian.
Ample opportunity for another accent. There we go.
It does sound like I'm currently looking for a new voiceover agent.
And I was taken scuba diving by Margaret Thatcher.
I tell you what, I don't believe in society, but I do believe in pufferfish. They're magnificent up close. The way they live is extraordinary, and they all run their own businesses in a way, in a sense. In that, well, they're self-employed, I suppose. They
puff themselves.
They puff themselves up, and they don't need anyone else doing it for them.
That was Margaret Thatcher / Omnitory by Henry Packer.
I remember the guy operating the boat out to the scuba diving.
He was from Mongolia.
he was from Mongolia, but he didn't say anything the whole trip. Shame. Very quiet man. But I do remember his assistant was a Scottish guy that kept on trying to get me to invest in
safe, long-term, trustworthy banking.
So what happened? Yeah, so similar thing in the our scuba diving instructor, right? During our first dive, so we'd done the practice bit in the pool. During our first dive, he went down to the bottom, to the seabed, to tie I think the anchor of the boat onto something.
To your leg,
Henry, mate, you're going to love this. Right? What we do is we tie the anchor to your leg. And, I won't tell you the rest. I don't want to spoil it for you. Just honestly, you're going to love it.
It's the Houdini half-price package, mate.
Basically, he was on the bottom of the seabed. He was standing on the seabed, tying up the anchor to the ground. And basically, he'd warned us before we went out for our first dive. He went, "Listen, guys, the fish, they're on your side. They're generally good people. The only one you've got to watch out for is the sea snake. It's the most poisonous of all the snakes. But they're very rare. You're unlikely to see one. So don't worry about it." Anyway, as he was on the seabed tying up the anchor, a sea snake.
What am I tying this with?
Hang on a minute.
It's got a face.
I assumed it was a polka dot rope. I thought that Mongolian guy was getting creative with the rope. He's so quiet. I assumed he's just been planning a vivacious looking rope.
So, and basically we saw a sea snake, me and my friends, we swam through his legs.
Oh my God.
And when you say through, you mean between his legs, right? Not
not through the flesh.
You're saying that, Mike, because as we've discussed, you are currently the texture of cake.
I'm falling to pieces, yeah.
You're falling to pieces.
This is a sturdy, healthy scuba instructor.
This is a steady, healthy Australian man. It went through his, it went between his legs. So we thought he was like showing off or something, like letting it go through his legs. Anyway, so we did dive. Then when we resurfaced, we said to him, "Oh my God, that was incredible. The sea snake went through your legs." And he's like, "What? What are you talking about?" We went, "A sea snake went through your leg. When you were on the bottom tying up the thing, a sea snake swam through your legs. That was incredible." He's like, "No, it didn't. What? What are you talking about? No, the most dangerous fish, snake in the... What? No. Didn't happen. What? What are you... Why?" And basically, it insulted his ego so much as a scuba instructor that he'd missed it, a sea snake going through his legs. That he basically gave us the cold shoulder for the rest of the holiday. On the way back, there was no banter. He just looked at the horizon, thinking a bit like my dentist, thinking,
I'm not really a detective, am I? I've always thought of myself as a detective of the deep, but I had a sea snake right under my very nose. I didn't see it.
Do you think he believed you and he was horrified? You don't think he was... He didn't think you were trying to rouse him up?
I think he either thought we were making fun of him, or I think probably secretly he did believe us and it was really insulting to his ego as a scuba instructor. Anyway, what I'm saying is it's similar with London's dentists in that...
Wherever you go, you catastrophically undermine the confidence of the professionals you encounter.
Yeah. And that's why all of those dentists, at a point in the interaction, did suggest that I tie myself to an anchor and jump out of the window. Yeah, so it became a bit weird. I was sort of worrying about my teeth, but also worrying about the egos of all these various professionals who couldn't solve it. And there was another dentist who she was I kept getting higher and higher. You know, she was a really advanced dentist,
a bionic.
She was like a bionic dentist. I went to this one dentist. It was quite futuristic, and it was quite Black Mirror, and it was all like glacial, beautiful women wafting around, going, "Hello, sir. Please welcome to the hygiene zone." And it was that kind of thing. And she had a special camera, and she went, "I found it." And she found a dark shadow in my top left rear tooth that none of the others had spotted.
Oh.
And again, I was like, and she went, "Yeah, she was actually from she was genuinely from Eastern Europe."
But you can pin that down, can't you, Henry, with your voice skills?
I don't know where to start.
Estonian?
Yeah, Estonian. She was like, but public school Britain educated.
All right. University in Newcastle.
Yeah. But didn't really mix with the locals, had quite a sort of London set that she stuck with.
I got fleeced by a dentist once when I lived in Tooting. It's a long old time ago.
Oh, yeah.
I went for a sort of routine checkup because I'd not been for a good few years. And this guy was like, yeah, really sorry, but in your one of your molars on the right there, we have found a little cavity there. It's gonna need a filling. And I'd never had a filling at that point and was devastated, mostly because I knew that my dentist at home where I'd grown up would be so disappointed in me. I couldn't face the prospect of
no sticker for you.
Seeing Amanda again. Exactly. No sticker from Amanda.
Because you had 20/20 chewing up until then, didn't you? And you were quite proud of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And he could see the tears welling up in my eyes, and he said, "Don't worry. There's these brand new brilliant fillings that are a perfect white, just like slightly off white, perfect for the tooth. So it'll blend in. It's camouflage, basically. So no one will ever know." So I said, "All right," and I paid him £80 or something like that. And then several years later, was finally able to go and see. I was visiting my parents. I went to see Amanda, the old dentist, to face Amanda.
Oh, Amanda.
To tell her the truth and confess about the filling. And she said, "Come on, let's have a look." And she had a good old look around my gob. And there was no filling there. There were just teeth.
What?
There was nothing.
He didn't do anything.
He did absolutely naff all. I got the emperor's new filling, basically, from this guy. I don't know what he did. He rummaged around. I'd never had a filling before, so I didn't know what it involved. He rummaged around. He poked me a bit. It was slightly uncomfortable. 5 minutes, and that was it.
Bloody hell.
Did he also steal your wallet while you were doing it?
Oh, yeah, he did all that. He's been living under my name ever since.
That's incredible.
Yeah. But about 3 or 4 years had gone by, and, you know, there's no way I'd kept the receipt for that or anything like that. I knew where the dentist's was, but I didn't live there anymore. And I simply couldn't be asked to go and demonstrate with him.
Did he have the furniture and the stuff? Did he have the...
The whole thing, yeah. It was a proper, yeah. It was a sort of a, like a little surgery above a shop, but there was a little waiting area. There was a reception desk. It was a little... Had the big light, had the dentist chair, the whole shebang. He was dressed as a dentist.
Mike, if you had gone back, it would have just been an empty room with a landline phone in the center of the floor, and it would be ringing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you'd pick it up, and they'd just be like, "You want your £80 back? Here's what you gotta do." But when they did it, do you remember? Did they do any drilling? Because the drilling is the main thing, right? They drill.
Well, that's it. I was aware that there might be drilling.
Also, drilling. You know, drilling. Certainly to anyone who's sort of got the voice skills and may or may not be looking for a new agent. It's quite an easy sound to fake, isn't it?
Well, what you're doing there, Henry, is you're putting yourself in the frame as the bogus dentist with that perfect drill impression.
It's a strange sort of, if you're going to go for the life of crime, a strange one to choose somehow, isn't it? Fake dentist.
I assume that he probably was a dentist. And that he just decided he would take the piss out of this young student who
I think he saw a mug coming, didn't he?
This guy's already told me he hasn't been to the dentist in 4 years or whatever. He's not going back for another 4 years. He can't be bothered.
You let him know that you are not a regular visitor.
That's why when you go, you have to say, when they say, when did you last go to the dentist? You should say, yesterday.
or this morning.
And I've got an appointment with the same highly trusted family dentist tomorrow afternoon. Okay.
Exactly.
Let's party.
When I was a student living in London, I chipped my tooth.
Oh, yeah.
I think opening a beer bottle with my teeth.
Lads. Hey, lads will be lads.
I tried that for the first time and it chipped a big part of my teeth off.
But you were a ledge, though.
Well, I don't think I was, because I think I just kind of went, ow.
Through the tears and the blood.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't coolly throwing back my bottle of Heineken, put it that way.
Ben, you've turned that story into beer to make it sound cool, but the fact is you were probably just removing the plastic wrapper off a new novel. So, go on, Chris, what happened?
And I went to the dentist and said, oh, I just did this and it's a big chip's come out of my front tooth. Pretty silly, I know, but here we are. And he just went, yeah, okay. What do you want me to do about it? And I was like, I don't know. But I assume you do stuff, don't you? And he just went, nah, just leave it, you'll be right. By this massive fucking chunk out of my... He just was like, well, I'm not going to do anything about it.
It's not the Sistine Chapel ceiling, mate, is it? You know what I mean? You don't need to restore it.
That was the vibe. It was just, like, oh, you think your smile is so valuable that I need to do anything to it. Just live with it. I just look like a toothless medieval peasant.
It's quite a good approach to professional life. He presumably charged you for his time as well.
Oh, yeah. For
sure.
Great
approach to any profession.
Basically, as long as there's a call-out fee or an initial assessment fee, you don't need to do anything, do you? You just go, to be honest, I don't think your house needs painting.
Yeah, naff off. Yeah.
Give us 78 quid and I'll be on my way.
Yeah, that leak is terrible. You're going to need to call a proper plumber. Thanks, that'll be 78 quid. Cheers.
Bye. As long as it's 78 quid, people will just feel they have to cough up.
Or, like Mike's dentist, just make the right sound. Close the door, make the right sounds. And then just leave.
Yeah, exactly. Make the sounds of, some builders chatting and painting away. Just conjure it up quite realistically. Like oh, what? Like, boss the old enamel. I wonder what they're talking about on LBC at the moment. Hi, I'm Nick Ferrari. We've got someone calling from Wales.
Oh, hello.
Oh, God.
Oh, we've lost him. The line's gone dead.
The man of 1,000 voices.
So did you get your tooth fixed in the end, Ben?
No, basically it looked terrible for a couple of years and then my teeth ground down to the level where it no longer looked quite so bad.
No, that's lovely. It's got a lovely ending, that story.
Oh. Yeah, so a bit of nocturnal sort of anxiety-based grinding sort of levelled it all off, basically.
Leaving those bits of shell in the scrambled egg, just a bit of erosion. Steadily over time.
Yeah.
And you've got paper thin but even teeth.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's correct. Yeah.
So that's actually quite a nice nice truth in that, isn't it? For example, if part of your paintwork is peeling in a room, if you wait long enough, all of the paintwork in your room will be peeling and it'll just and so you'll go with that look. Yeah. And that's what you've done with your teeth.
Basically, yes. Yeah.
You've got deconstructed teeth as a design choice.
Send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress, like a robot shoeing a horse.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, time to read your emails. Thank you to everyone who sent us an email. Let's start with some Pompidou admin.
Oh, yeah.
Pompid admin.
Okay.
Pompidou men.
I don't know if anyone's been accessing the Pompidou discount across the summer. I'm sure some people have. We've had a few people get in contact to, you know, to moot the idea that they could also offer their own Pompidou discount. There's a chance that this podcast becomes a kind of, you know, we forget about all the rest of it and it becomes a kind of Martin Lewis style money saving thing where we just get,
maybe that's
15% off various stuff.
Maybe that's what the world needs, you know, maybe then it actually has a use.
So for example, Dr. P gets in touch. Mm-hmm. Which sounds pretty pretty shady.
Hang on, Ben, can you just pause? There's some real squealing happening. I'm just going to close the windows. There's some incredible squealing. Yeah.
There he is.
Thank you.
Very revealing, Henry.
What?
Well, you know, what does one do when one hears squealing outside the window? Does one investigate? Does one call for help? Does one simply shut the windows and continue?
In London town, you shut the windows and you go on with your life, because that's what's great about the city, Mike, is that we don't judge you. And we don't judge you even if you're being murdered. That's your right, yeah? Whereas, in Exeter, everyone's got an opinion, haven't they? Oh, maybe I should call the police. Oh. Yeah? Whereas here, no, you get on with it.
Dr. P writes, I feel motivated to embody the spirit of the beans and find a way I could offer my own Pompidou discount. Oh. Alas, I have no wares to sell, but I am but a humble consultant neuropsychologist.
Okay.
So I could probably knock 15% off the price of a cognitive assessment. Cheerio, Dr. P.
But the trouble is then, if someone says Pompidou in the middle of their cognitive assessment, will that skew the results?
Yes.
It's tricky.
What would happen during a cognitive assessment like that?
Well, you need to ask Dr. P, really.
Is it sort of Rorschach-based?
I think a lot of these shapes, it'll be which of these, how does this shape make you feel? Do you remember that triangle I showed you earlier?
What shape was it?
That's your mum, that is.
Did I show it to you? Maybe not. And I think... But
there you go. Sounds like you could come to us for an even cheaper cognitive assessment. Then
I think these days, up to 90 to 95% of cognitive assessments, at the end of them, they'll go, you know what? Got your results in. It wasn't to do with the triangles. That was complete bullshit. We are actually studying what you did with the sandwich we gave you during the break. It turns out this is all a marketing thing by M&S. They want to know, is their new prawn cocktail sauce too rich? Turns out it is, because you winced while eating it. Bye.
But you did finish it, so it wasn't a total failure.
But you did finish it. So it's almost all, and you know, things like that famous experiment where they got someone to, they got people to turn up the electric shock on someone.
Yeah.
It's all that sort of stuff. So none of it's actually real. Do you know what I mean? It's very, almost always they're testing for something else, not the thing that they say they're testing you for. Because if you test someone for what you say that you're testing them for, you'll get skewed results. So because that person knows they're being tested for a certain thing. To get tested for what you want to be tested for, you just have to hope that the fake, get enough tests for other things and hope that it's actually a fake test for the thing you want to be tested for. So it is it's tricky area.
And with 50% off, that means you can do more of those tests in the hope that you come round to the one that's actually useful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also, even if it is that, even if it is the thing they're actually testing for is the right thing, again, 90% of those tests will be placebos anyway, so you won't have learnt anything.
Ian emails. He runs a fencing club in Nottingham.
Fencing, did you say?
And I have to compliment you on your fencing chat from the episode about swords.
Oh.
You are right. There are three different weapons with the modern sport of fencing, and you got their names correct. Eventually, they are foil, épée, and sabre. He writes, if I may do some self-promotion, listeners can find all the details of our club. Oh, hang on, this is an advert. At www.ratcliffeswordclub.co.uk. We might even be able to find some sort of listener discount on our beginner's course.
Yes, although the trouble with that line of work is you're in that situation where your customer could always be in the position of, you get to the end of the class and you say, can you now please pay me for the sword fighting class? And they put the blade to your throat. No, sir, I shall not. Unless you want me to run you through your gizzard with this sabre. Ha, 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 ha. Goodbye. And they gallop off. So always get paid up front. If it's anything like, even from judo, anything to do with, you know, archery.
Yeah, gun lessons.
Gun lessons, get paid up front.
There you go, Ian. Happy to help.
And there's one last, I'm going to read this one out, but I've realised that essentially it's people with small businesses getting a cheap advert out of this.
And Wiz, one thing we don't support in this podcast, it's small businesses.
And this is from Rebecca. She runs a sushi delivery service around South Wales called Sushi Wales. And you can get a Pompidou discount using the discount code BEANS10. Anyway, sushiwhales.com. This is the last free advert we're doing.
Good selection, though.
It is a good evening, isn't it?
It's a neuropsychology, fencing, sushi.
It's pleasingly diverse, isn't it?
It's a full day, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Quite a good. That's quite a good stag do weekend or something, is it? You do.
At what point do you do the cognitive assessment? At the beginning or the end?
Well, before and after, I think both. Yeah.
See if it's changed.
You measure the impact of the stag do.
Okay, let's go for listener bollocking of the week.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
This is from Matthias, not from Bremen, but from Germany, but living in Norway. Dear Beans, it is with a heavy heart that I would like to issue a bollocking. I was surprised that Mike did not know the reason why Toledo is full of sword souvenir stalls. The reason is that Toledo is one of the two premier sword manufacturing centres of the European Middle Ages.
Wow.
They are justifiably proud of their city's long history in the making of stabbing implements. The identity of the second centre leads me to my bollocking.
Oh.
It is, of course, Solingen in Germany. Given that Solingen provided much of Europe, including the UK, with blade blanks used to make swords, it seems unfair to exclude Germany from the great sword cultures.
Can you load a sword with blanks?
Yeah, for practicing and stuff.
So basically, he's annoyed that we didn't mention Germany in the great sword cultures. Then he writes, Germany, on the other hand, is probably the only country that practices actual sword duels to the blood to this day.
No, come off it.
He writes, seriously, look up academic fencing. This will also explain why in old movies, Nazi officers all have scars on their faces. And then final part of the bollocking. And to add insult to injury, you also didn't acknowledge the country as one of the great ham cultures, despite the existence of Black Forest ham. Sincerely, Matthias.
And that's the ham which you get inside a Black Forest gatto, isn't it?
So a lot going on there, but I think...
Wow. Okay. Well, my suspicion is that Matthias is just a bit homesick and that's why he's crotchety.
Good point.
But I don't want to make that worse, so I'll accept that.
Bollocking accepted.
But what's he actually accusing you of doing wrong? Like, you're just not mentioning Solingen?
Gross negligence, I think, is ultimately the complaint.
Yes, and I think, Mike, you should apologise to the great nation of Germany.
Entschuldigung, Sie bitte.
Very nice.
Es tut mir leid.
Nicely done. Of course, a sword culture goes with a ham culture in the same way that a gun culture goes with a nozzle culture.
Uh-huh.
Just something to think about.
And a catapult culture goes with
really nice halloumi wraps. Lovely.
Lovely, lovely halloumi wraps. It's just the right amount of hummus in.
Laura emails, hi Beans, I hope you're well. I just wanted to let Henry know that I named my Westie puppy after him.
What?
Wow.
I can send you a photograph, Henry.
Oh, what an honour.
I'll have a look as well. Come on.
Yeah, I'll put it in the WhatsApp.
Share and share alike. Good grief. He's absolutely adorable.
Look at him.
Henry.
He's unbelievable.
What a compliment.
You've never looked that cute, Henry.
I've never looked that cute. Even when I had those proportions, which obviously I did as a child.
And that white fur.
The white fur. And that facial expression. What would you say that is exactly?
I think it's, I've just eaten my own shit.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
And I'm cool with it.
And I'm cool with it. It's got exactly that is sort of a total abandon, isn't it? It's like... Yeah.
Hey, it's a Sunday.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I've eaten my own shit. It's like that, isn't it? It's like, I've done that and you can't stop me. And I might do it again later. Yeah, he's very sweet.
So Laura says, I binge listened to your podcast before getting a new dog and thought Henry was a smashing name. In fact, I'd go as far as to say that the name inspired me to go and get a new puppy.
Wow.
So thank you. He's a delight. He has slightly more hair than Bean Henry. And it's probably just as amusing. Please see the pictures attached. He says hi and woof to Pam and Bluebell.
Very good. Thank you.
All the best.
Well, hello, the new Henry.
And maybe next week, Mike, we do the podcast with the dog Henry rather than...
It's right. Worth considering, isn't it?
Be shorter. Yeah.
It can't be worse.
I love all this. I do love all this. Well, when it comes to... to me and that dog, Henry, certainly you know, it could be said that, what, you know, always a...
Oh, I see.
You could say, couldn't you, one of them certainly has a demented look on his face, spends most of the day not really achieving very much, sniffing similar beings' arses.
There we go.
Yep. And likes nothing more than getting his face into a bowl of wet meat. And tell you what, occasionally he gives off a slightly unpleasant smell.
Here we go.
But
here we go.
And
bring it home.
And thank goodness he's had his testicles removed. And the other one's me.
Whoa!
No, I got that wrong. And the other one's the small dog.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? I thought you were trying to say that. Oh, he's gone the other... What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that... Oh, that's what he meant. What? So, what he said before wasn't actually... I thought it... Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God.
It's the old switcheroo.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so it's worth doing that. Cheers. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for everyone who signed up on Patreon, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There are various tiers, but on the Sean Bean tier, you get access to the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike spent his evening last night.
So I did.
And what a night it was. It was, of course, the annual antibacterial wipe ball.
Such a wonderful event, isn't it?
That's right.
Oh.
That's right. Hotly anticipated. And here's my report.
Last night in the Sean Bean Lounge, Sean Bean was so clean you could eat your dinner off him within reason, because it was the annual antibacterial wipe ball, with music from Colby Shaft and the pre-moistened towelettes. Ceremonial cleaning of Sean Bean's hard-to-reach areas was performed by Peter Jensen, Laura Tui, Ben Harding and Victoria, after which he was presented with an antique Alabama handkerchief soaked in moonshine by Taylor Vickers and Katie Gard, along with a cold oshibori stolen from a Japanese restaurant by Rachel Kay. Johnny Martin's Dylan Chuley and Katie Parsons wowed peckish Sean Bean is by ensuring that all the vol-au-vents tasted of eucalyptus, lemon or hospital. Rose Lawler, assuming the event was fancy dress, turned up as an airline mini-wipe and could only watch proceedings from the inside of a sealed cutlery package. From there, she saw Matthew Blake perform the antibacterial foxtrot, Kingdom Steel's epic slam poem, Don't Wipe Me, I'm a Good Bacterium, and Tim Larson's moving speech about the fact that it's got to be okay to talk about anal hygiene. Towards the end of the night, as is traditional, Alex Matt, Scott Bauscher, and Louise Griffin flushed every piece of wet wipe-themed party paraphernalia down the bog, and then it was straight down the Sean Bean Lounge sewers with the rest of us for the annual Fatberg Melee. And we'd have been there for hours were it not for Oliver Pell and Rookery setting sail in their brand new self-destructing berg busting drain frigate, the Turd Tannic. Pell and Rookery remain unaccounted. Thanks all.
And now to find out whose version of our theme tune will be playing us out, we got this email from Charlie. Hi Beans, I was recently at a car boot sale in Aberystwyth and came across a box of old records. As I was rifling through them, one in particular stood out. It was a single in a simple white envelope, very old and tattered, and it had a drawing on it that looked like a blimp, but in the shape of a bean. I asked the woman whose stall it was and if she knew more about it, but when she looked at it, her eyes went really wide and she just quickly said, I don't know. I didn't know I still had that. That's free, that one. You can have it. Please just take it. And pushed it into my hands and hurried off. I got home...
The cursed vinyl!
I got home, plugged in my old record player and unsheathed the record for the first time.
Is she going to say she... But then she looked down at her hands holding the record and she had two monkey's hands. Because the cursed vinyl had been passed on.
I think that was implicit.
That was implicit, wasn't it? Okay, carry on.
On the label was the same drawing of the bean-shaped blimp, and underneath it was written, HP Test Pressing, 1971. Anyway, I went to the effort of converting it to digital because I think you should hear this. So we'll use that to play us out. Thank you for listening. It's nice to be back.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Cheerio.
Bye.